I'm Silvahara Pettyon. Welcome to my show. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms. Hello, everybody. I'm Silvahara Pettyon. Welcome to the show. We have been hearing and talking a lot about diversity, equity, and inclusion in the past few years. However, we must stop and ask ourselves, who is representing the content? And how is this content being presented? This question matters because, as one journalist eloquently wrote, making decisions about communities of color without communities of color in the room is negligent. Making those decisions about our community while actively ignoring input is the definition of oppression. And when this is happening in a newsroom, in a media industry, a watchdog agency so influential that it can perpetuate the pattern of inequity that it calls out in other institutions, we have to pay extra attention. Those words, written by Lori Lizarraga, former Denver journalist, who wrote an article sounding the alarm to the public about what many of us who have worked in the media industry have known and experienced: alleged discrimination in newsroom. The first generation 27-year-old claims that news executives let her go out of her contract and let other two on-air Latina reporters go within the past several years without good reason. Thank you for joining us today, Lori.
Thank you so much for having me, Silva. I appreciate it.
Lori, I'm going to ask you the question. How has your life changed since the publication of your article?
It's only been 2 weeks, Silva, so I think I'll have to let you know. I'm having a lot more conversations, certainly, in the last 2 weeks. I feel less alone, by far. My experience that I wrote about is a shared one, and I'm learning that more and more every single day. And that has changed my last 2 years a lot. I felt alone a lot of the times, and me and my journalists of color in the newsroom really felt isolated a lot of the time. Often we would go through those experiences and almost not even want to share them with each other, just out of fear for, is it me or is it some type of discrimination? We care a lot about the work that we do, and we want to do a good job. So throwing yourself under the bus every single time one of these things happens, it weighs on your feeling of capability to do the job. And the ways that this has changed my life in the last 2 weeks has made me, you know, realize that this is a feeling that a lot of people have had, unfortunately, and I am certainly not alone.
For people that haven't read the piece, right? For people who don't know what this is all about, can you summarize what you were trying to say in that article?
Summarize what I was trying to say. I already was given a very hard task putting it just into 1,500 words, Silva, so let's see if I can shorten it. I mean, the gist of it is it's been a hard 2 years, and here's why. And it's not just the struggle of being a journalist or being a reporter in a new city. It's not just being one of very few people of color in a newsroom with a predominantly white, you know, population of managers and just colleagues. It's not just feeling the burden of representing your community and their issues. And if you don't say it, nobody else will. It's also the struggle of being made to feel an inch tall just on your own for what you really do believe is good work, or what your understanding of its impact is that it's good and that it's actually having an effect in the community that's positive, but then feeling gaslit often and not knowing that that's what you should call it. Watching others get praised in the newsroom for a work that garnered less results than the work you were doing, but you didn't hear a thank you or any kind of, you know, encouragement about it. So you're constantly battling if you're doing a good job, when most of the feedback that you're getting is about the things you could be doing better, but you know that your newsroom is capable of complimenting and of building up and of empowering. It's just you're not the recipient of that. And you're watching your friends who share the same passion for reporting on the same communities experience similar versions of this. You know, it's 2021. You don't want to believe that this stuff is still happening, but it very much is. And you almost don't really believe yourself when you're saying it. So you know there will be doubt if you talk about it to other people who aren't familiar with your experience. How do I get you to understand without sounding like I'm a disgruntled former employee or just not doing good at my job? The moral of my story was that I am not discussing one way or the other how good I was at my job or whether I deserve to have my contract renewed. That is not the point. The point is that no matter how good or bad I am at my job, nobody deserves to be treated that way. And I saw so many of us not deserve to be treated that way, treated that way. That's the point of the story.
Yeah. And you talk about a lot of friction when it came to covering stories within the community that you represent. And you talk about vernacular that you got into an argument with, and or not necessarily argument, but disagreement with when it comes to, you know, undocumented, you know, or illegal, and all of those, the labeling really impacts how people are viewed.
Right.
And communities of color understand that and understand the undercurrent of those labels and the impact it has. But talk to me about covering stories and having to sort of fight for stories, about having stories tabled, about having consistently having conversations about what the community is feeling and wanting to represent the community in a newsroom that may not have a complete perspective on what they're doing and how challenging that was.
It's odd speaking to a group of people who don't have an expertise or lived experiences the way you do. And for them to not just be the experts on what goes on in the newsroom in their all, you know, shared experience and the guidelines of the newsroom, but to also assert that they're the experts of my community and of our lived experiences and of the ways we want to be referred to is a very interesting environment to come into, to see that kind of just bold belief of all-knowingness. So it was sort of, I guess, in the most generous way, a level of cocky that I wasn't prepared for. And it got me into, I mean, I think a standoff is a good way to say it, an argument within the first 2 weeks of my starting, where I'm telling you that this is not the best way to discuss or refer to our undocumented community, especially when this is a student in high school, this is a kid. And the kid's already nervous about using this platform to even tell his story because this is such a sensitive subject. But you want me to change the script, you know, an hour and a half before this goes on TV to say that he is in the country illegally. And I can't put my voice to that. I cannot speak those words. And the undercurrent of that is, this is my family. This was my mom and my grandma. I watched them get their citizenship. I saw the lengths that my family had to go to. I've seen my friends, my community. I understand that this is an extremely complicated subject. So if we are giving this story a platform, we need to give it also some sensitivity and be fair to the person who we've asked to share their story. And we just couldn't get on the same page about it, so much so that the person, you know, the manager who I was having this conversation with told me at one point, you know, who you should talk to? You should talk to one of our other white anchors, because he's just a grammar guru. He knows, you know, the reasons and can better explain, way better than me, why this is the appropriate way to do it, why this is actually the most respectful way to do it. And I'm just standing there like, I'm not having trouble understanding the grammar of it. You're having trouble understanding that I'm not talking about grammar, and I'm not sure where we're getting lost in translation here. And that would discourage me, and I would watch it discourage many other reporters from this side of it, from, you know, a Latino side, who are familiar with the refugee and the undocumented communities and the struggles that these communities face. It would discourage a lot of us from doing immigration coverage because we didn't want to put our communities in that position. And they so deserve this platform, but we were really left with choices, and we were given these stipulations and these guardrails that were put on us. Tell the story, but you must X, Y, and Z. When we've already said that we don't want to do those things, or that we're not comfortable, or that it's not fair to our community. We're so careful about language, and we're so strategic so often. So it didn't seem fair that we could be asserting that this is the better way to do it. And then it just wasn't important.
You know, something really tugged at my heart when I read your article, and I want to pull it up and read that. And I want to hear about how you felt about this, because, oh, did I send it to myself? Yes, I did. Here it is. So bear with me here. So I'm going to use my computer here to read a piece of what Lori wrote, and you said there was an incident where you used a 8 seconds of a Spanish interview without captions, and that was a big deal. And a few months later, you say, quote, "I was instructed not to wear my hair in a bun with a middle part anymore. A style I have seen and worn as a Mexican and Ecuadorian woman all my life. Not a good look, I was told." Can you tell me what that felt like?
I was mad. I feel sad hearing it back now more than I did in the moment, but in the moment I was just angry. Because there is so much to be said for what brings different cultures our identity. And there is a white version of what's deemed professional. And what I was being told was, I don't even know if it would, go so far as to say it's not professional. I think the gist of what I was being told by white women was, well, we don't like that. Don't wear it. We don't like it. It's not pretty. Your version of what looks good and my version of what looks good is going to be different because we have different hair, but we also just come from different cultures. So we're going to dress differently and look different, and our hair is going to be done in different ways. I'm going to wear jewelry that you might not wear. So it wasn't that I was not malleable to what looks good on TV. I've made lots of adjustments for what looks best on TV. I understand that. This was cutting to the core of my identity and my background, my culture, my grandmothers on both sides. I was mad. I'm sad now to think that that has happened to other people in other ways. But it just showed the lack of being able to see or even wanting to try to see beyond anything but your lived experience. And what a shallow puddle to pull from in life if all that looks good or is good is what you believe, or what you are comfortable with, or what you have seen, or your definition of what is good for a reporter to look like. That's silliness.
You just said that at the time you were mad, and listening to it back, it makes you sad. Can you tell me why?
Because I feel, I guess, older now. And it feels more hindsight. So thinking of myself in those positions, and thinking of adults treating young journalists that way, you really can rob us of our spirit and of our desire to want to be there when we speak to each other so harshly like that. It's just not fair to be in the business of communication and communicate so poorly. And so I guess just thinking about myself in that time, it does make me sad because I was younger. I think, this experience has aged me more than probably it should have. But I mean, that's the truth. I know now that I'll get through it. So I have the capacity to be emotional about it. But at the time, you don't have the space to let it get you sad. in order to keep going. You can't sit there or you'll just never get up. So, you have to have outrage over it, because I had so many of my colleagues of color, tell me, like, I'm tired. I'm tired. Nothing shocks me anymore. I'm exhausted. And I would just say all the time, we don't get to be tired yet. We have to do this because there are people coming behind us who need it, and there are people who were before us who get to be tired. They're not out here. It's us now. And we don't get to just be acclimated to what should incite outrage. And so I guess, that's really the difference, was then I didn't have the luxury of sad. You have to feel
You
like you
have
can
to
keep going.
let it roll off your back and move forward. And I think I asked the question because I think about all of the things that I've been told, right? Getting into the business 23, 24 years ago. And I was told everything from your hair's too dark, your features are too strong, your olive skin's too difficult to light. You sound foreign. And on some level, there's truth to those things because I am those things.
Right.
And
They're just not bad things.
which are not bad things. And the upside of all of that, I have, in my 20s, I have more life experience than most 50-year-olds would have, surviving of war and a revolution and immigration and a refugee and like all of those things, right? Those are the values that I bring to the table. But to hear, having been through that, a life like that, and then being told, your features are too strong, so therefore you don't get to be on television. I mean, if you're not strong enough, if you don't have a strong character, if you don't have a strong identity, it can kick the wind out of you. And there, I've seen so many young journalists get into the business and have one experience like that, and they're done because, they don't want to have to deal with that. They don't want to, So I think we just have to, we have to be better. We have to do better. We have to take all kinds of things into consideration. And I don't know if this is something that will change overnight. I don't know if it'll ever really truly change without real movement behind it. But what I know is that we have to talk about it. And I know that I have the power and the platform to continue to speak on it. And, having the pleasure and the honor of meeting people like you and giving you the platform to have this conversation, and hoping that someone along the way listening to this, working in, small market or just getting into a new job that is competitive, is listening to this and is doubting themselves and is able to say, no, I am worthy of who I am, and I need to be strong in who I am, and I matter, And I know we're talking about the media, and this is not a shared experience for a lot of people who are watching and listening, but I know this is a shared experience in a lot of organizations where you feel like you have something to say, where you feel like your experience or your wisdom, a lived experience, is valuable. And we so much shy away from saying something because we're afraid of losing our jobs. We're afraid of, being blackballed and blacklisted and, all of that. But this is
Even
the
at the very least,
platform.
just being judged, that's in itself enough to keep people from speaking up. It's very difficult to feel on the outside of something, and just going with the flow is often just putting your head down and putting up with this, because it's difficult to speak up and say, well, I feel like I was hurt by this. That's hard.
Well, I mean, I think it's more than hurt. I think it's a matter of we're really talking about the systemic discrimination, a systemic distribution of or execution of a way that things have been done. And this we're at an impasse where we have to have these conversations and we have to do things differently. We saw it in 2020. We're seeing it in 2021. And this is a platform where we want to empower people to use their voice.
I'm Silva Haripetyan. We talk ordinary people, extraordinary stories, living life on their own terms.